Well, Sarah Dykeman and the word adventure seem to go hand in hand. Born in Kansas City, Sarah just completed a 3,500 mile, let me say that again, 3,500 miles, a 13-state education-linked adventure that took her and her crew from Glacier National Park to a series of creeks and rivers to the Missouri River and eventually to the Mississippi and to the Gulf of Mexico, all via canoe. That's not all she's done. She's also traveled from Bolivia to Texas by bike, walked from Mexico to Canada, and completed a 49-state bike tour. She gives presentations to students across the country, and she's about to give us a presentation right here on Up to Date. And welcome back and congratulations.
Thanks.
3,500 miles. What were you thinking, girl?
Well, I've always wanted to see our country by canoe. I've done lots of bike tours, like you said, and I always have to deal with cars and the roads that people have decided where they go. So instead I thought, let's go on a canoe trip. Let's see the river. Let's see our country by the river.
Did you ever calculate how many paddles of the oar it took to get through 3,500 miles?
Well, when we speak to kids at presentations, we show them how to do one paddle stroke, and then we say do that 9,999 more times each day.
Is that what it is, roughly?
About roughly, yeah. It really depends. You know, when we were up higher in the mountains in Montana, there was a lot more daylight, so we were paddling a lot more. And then as we got onto the Mississippi, a lot less light, so we were paddling a little bit less, and we had the current to help us along.
The current helps a little bit, right. So what was it about canoe that intrigued you so much that you wanted to do this, take this journey?
I just really love seeing different perspectives. So when you bike, you really see the world from a bike.
You do.
When you walk, it's a very different perspective. And so I really want to challenge myself with a new type of adventure. And I'd met people that had done canoe trips, and I just really liked the idea of it.
Mm-hmm. And you started at Glacier National Park. Do I have that right?
Yep, we
started. Used to work out there. We spent a summer working out there. What a wonderful place.
It is. I really wanted to connect places that were important to me, so I got to connect the mountains and Glacier to Kansas City and to the ocean. So every time you cross over the river here in Kansas City, you can look upstream and imagine the mountains, because that's where the water camp comes from.
It's like, where did you start? What point? Where in the park?
Well, we started on a fairly small peak called Triple Divide Peak, but it's pretty special and significant because it sits on the Continental Divide, which divides the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans.
Yeah.
But it also is on another divide called the Laurentian Divide. So from this one peak in Glacier called Triple Divide Peak, the water can flow to the Arctic Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, or the Pacific Ocean.
No kidding. And that's cold water too, isn't it?
Yeah, real cold.
You don't want to fall over.
You don't, but you can drink it, and it's beautiful. And,
Did you have much experience as a canoeist before you did this, or did you just like do it because you thought, I can do this?
Well, that's sort of funny. I decided I want to do this trip, and so I went to the Boundary Waters where I had a friend, and she gave me a 7-day tutorial on how to canoe.
That's all you
And
all
I was
you
like,
needed.
All right, we'll learn on the way. But luckily, I wanted to do this with more than just myself. So I recruited three friends, and the last friend that we recruited, he happens to be a semi-professional whitewater canoer.
Oh, really?
So I was like, if he can't teach us how to canoe, no one can. So
is there more to it than meets the eye? Because people just think you put this piece of wood in the water and you push it and away you go.
I mean, you can do that. But if you want to be more efficient and, feel more like
connected with the water and stuff. Yeah.
And just like you know what you're doing. It's nice when you feel like you're a team and you're working together. And the boat really just moves really smooth when you know what you're doing.
So if you have two people in the canoe, I've always wondered about this. Is it more efficient if you're both paddling together or if you're alternating?
Yeah, usually the person in the back is sort of in charge.
Yes.
And the person in the front is more just for power, and so that you are on opposite sides and you're trying to time your strokes to be
together,
hitting the water at the same time.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, since the person in the back is in charge, we would switch every day so that we'd all get a chance to sort of be in charge.
I was going
to
say, are you a back of the canoe person or a front of the canoe? Somehow I think you're a back of the canoe person.
I like to be the back, but it's nice to sort of, when you're in the front, you can sort of daydream a little more and take photos.
I'm wondering, did you have to portage at all, or was this just a journey where you were in the water the whole way?
Yeah, so we portaged a few times. Probably the most common, obvious portages were on the Missouri River. It's dammed multiple times. So we had to paddle about 800 miles of still water reservoirs, and we had to portage about six times. But our craziest portage, we started on the wrong side of the Continental Divide in Glacier. And so we luckily...
By mistake?
No, that's just where we met up.
Oh.
And so we knew we needed to get to the other side of the divide, and we didn't
have
cars.
That's a big mountain. I've been out there. That's a big mountain.
Right. So we did what I think is probably the craziest thing on the trip, which was to attach our canoes to our bicycles, which we brought on the whole trip, and we pedaled our canoes via bike over the mountains and glacier.
How did you do that?
We woke up real early to avoid traffic, and we just went for it. And
we were like balancing the thing between two bikes?
Oh, no, I see what you say. We have a trailer. They're made by Wyke, and they allow us to attach our canoes to a little trolley and to our bicycles and pull them.
Yeah. So when you were on the Missouri and you said you were in between reservoirs there and it's still water, is that a harder paddle or an easier paddle?
It's harder because there's no current.
There's no current. You got to make your own.
Right. And then if there's any wind at all, the wind kicks up big waves. So it can get a little bit more dicey. And it's a little bit more mentally challenging just because instead of going 5 miles an hour with current, or 6 or 7 miles an hour, you're going three, and the second you stop paddling, you're potentially going backwards.
Oh, is that right? Well, tell me, what did you see? What was along the way that you'll remember for the rest of your life?
For starters, I was really surprised how wild and scenic the river is. I was expecting a lot more industry. I was expecting it to be dirtier and feel grosser than it was. But it was really, really beautiful. The cliffs and the bluffs here in Missouri were phenomenal. We timed the trees and the fall colors just perfectly.
Wow.
And then it's just a great corridor. You know, all the animals that travel up and down the continent kind of rely on the Missouri River as a corridor. So we saw tons of amazing wildlife.
Like what?
Lots and lots of pelicans.
Yeah.
Lots of migrating shorebirds, mm-hmm. beavers, deer, coyotes.
Are you channeling Lewis and Clark the whole time you're out there?
We read a little bit about Lewis and Clark.
How could you not? Yeah.
And, you know, sort of there were moments on the trip where we knew where Lewis and Clark was and what they were doing when we were there. And it's pretty fun to reflect and think about how different the country was, but still how exciting it is that you can still go on an adventure.
Were there parts of the river that were just sort of disgusting? I mean, did you see that or not really?
You know, it's there, but it's pretty easy to forget after about a mile. You might see something kind of sketchy going in the river, and then about a mile down, there's frogs on the banks again, and it was more beautiful than I was expecting. Quite a bit of trash, but
you seeing deer, you seeing moose, you seeing bald eagles, all that stuff, or not?
We didn't see any moose, but we did see lots and lots of bald eagles, quite a few deer. I'm an amphibian biologist, so I always was on the lookout for frogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw a lot of frogs and snakes, too.
Wow. Were you in a hurry, or were you taking your time? Did you have a schedule you were trying to keep, or how did you manage all that?
It sort of depended on the part of the trip. So up in the beginning of our trip, the schools were not in session, and we didn't really have a schedule. We were just taking our time and enjoying scenery. And then once we started planning schools, you know, they had to arrange for buses to get to the river, which they needed time in order to do. So we had a little bit more of a schedule. And so there were days where we wanted to stop, but we kept going so that we would be able to hit our
So the buses
targets.
Would bring the kids to you on the river, or would you get on the bus and go to them in school?
We did both. So a lot of times we met kids at the river, and we did a little field trip where they got to do some exploring on their own, see our gear, see us in our boats, and then we would often ride our canoes via bike to their school and then do a presentation where we showed photos and told stories.
How many of those did you do?
We worked with about 15 schools up and down the river, and maybe about half were field trips as well.
Were you arranging those ahead of time? Because were you on your cell phone as you were coming down the river saying, hey, Mr. Principal, can I come see your kids?
A little bit of both. So we kind of had some schools lined up that were interested, and then it was me in the front of the canoe getting a break by saying I had to make up phone calls and just, you know, arrange dates and times and stuff like that.
Sarah Dykeman is my guest. She just completed a 3,500-mile, 13-state adventure that took her from Glacier National Park down to the Gulf of Mexico and right by Kansas City. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You went through Kansas City.
Yep, we went through Kansas City.
Family came down to see you, maybe? Yep. You have family here still?
Yep, yeah. And then we rode our bikes. I didn't tell my friends about the hills. We rode our bikes with our canoes to my parents' house and stayed over a week, which was our longest break, but we got to visit quite a few schools and enjoy Kansas City.
And you brought the canoes with you, or you left them down on the water?
We brought them with us just because Kansas City is about the halfway point, and we wanted to clean up our boats a little bit and get all of our gear in order.
What kind of boats were you in? What kind of canoe?
We actually got a great deal from a company called Clipper, and they make these really awesome, super sturdy canoes. Ours were 2 18.5-foot-long Clipper canoes.
Like aluminum, or are they something else?
They're made of fiberglass, so you know, we had to be careful with them, but they were perfect for doing a long trip. We could put a lot of gear, including our bikes, of course.
Did you get to keep them, or did they have to turn the canoes back in?
We ended up selling them in New Orleans. It's more difficult than you'd think to move a canoe when you don't have a river.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about taking water samples as you went along. You know, what was that for, and how were they analyzed, and what did you find out?
Right, so we teamed up with an organization called Adventures and Scientists for Conservation, mm-hmm. and they connect adventurers to scientists to collect data. And so we were collecting water samples all up and down the river and sending them to their lab to test for microplastics, which are just tiny little pieces of plastic. You can't see them, but they're in the water, and they are an environmental health problem.
A problem in what way? If animals ingest it, is it that kind of thing?
Yeah, so they're kind of like sponges that absorb toxins. So when you get a couple pieces in the water, an animal ingests that, including ourselves, and that can bioaccumulate and build in the animals.
Yeah. And what would you find? Are the levels going up? Is it becoming a greater problem?
Well, so we've sent in 36 samples, about one every 150 miles.
Yeah.
And we've only gotten 7 back so far. It takes a while to go through all that water, especially the Missouri, since there's so much sediment in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But of the 7 that we've received results from, all but one had at least 2 pieces of plastic in it. And that was up in Montana. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like down here.
So a little discouraging then.
Right, but you know, this is becoming a problem that people are more and more aware about, and solutions are being made. So,
yeah. What was your greatest day on the river? Do you recall a day or a place where you were? You got out of the boat and went up on top of a bluff, or tell me about a day that you still just will remember.
So the very beginning of the Missouri River, where we connected to the river, there's the White Cliffs, which is a scenic riverway.
And Lewis and Clark talk about those cliffs, I think.
Right, and a lot of people say that is about the most unchanged since Lewis and Clark has been there, so you could really imagine what they were seeing.
And that's an amazing thing, isn't it?
It was, and it was just so beautiful, and of course you see little bluffs, and you have to climb up there and explore.
What do they look like? Are they super tall? Like towering?
Yeah, they're fairly tall. They're a lot of them were white or pinkish.
Yeah,
they just kind of raised right out of the river floor, and it feels like you're just in a canyon hallway of cliffs with birds soaring, and it was really, really beautiful, and the water was. You know, it was the middle of summer. We were swimming 10, 20 times a day. And you know, we're like 10-year-old kids on vacation.
And a bad day on the river would have been what?
Ooh, there were some days where we had really bad sideways rain and horrible winds. And then the wind brings chop and you go slow and you're cold. In fact, one of the girls on the trip, her name's Nia, her birthday was celebrated with probably the worst rain of the trip, and luckily we made a little shelter, and we had purchased a cast iron Dutch oven, and we used that Dutch oven to cook her a cake and kind of turn the day around.
Who financed this trip, or did you guys finance it yourselves?
Yeah, so luckily doing adventures like this doesn't take a lot of money. You know, there's really
roughly what it costs you, can I ask?
Yeah, it's about $10 a day for food per person.
Yeah.
And you're not buying anything else, really.
Yeah.
And you can make it less expensive if you want, but you know, we like to eat.
Did anybody sponsor your trip?
So we had...
The canoes, yeah.
We had quite a few companies come forward and help us, at least give us nice discounts on our gear. And then along the way, there's people that we call River Angels.
Uh-huh.
And River Angels invite you to their houses. Maybe they cook you a meal, give you some food along the way.
How did you find them?
Sometimes they find you. Mm-hmm. There's also a great Facebook page out there that lets people on the Missouri River kind of talk to each other. And there's just sort of a network. So sometimes it was just a random person that was interested in our trip, and they'd talk to us and, you know.
Yeah.
Invite us over for a meal, and other times we knew that they were there. And
I got to run in just a second, but just quickly, what's next?
I'm going to work for about a year to make some money, and then I'm hoping my next trip is going to be a bike tour to follow the monarch butterflies.
Oh, sounds great. What a great idea.
And actually,
I'd like... talked about them here on the show, yeah.
I would like to just tell folks that I have a new website coming up that's called beyondabook.org, and that's going to be sort of where all my projects are.
Beyondabook.org.
Yep.
That sounds great.
And then next Tuesday, the 26th, I'm going to be presenting for the Big Muddy Speaker Series and talking a little bit more about my trip, so you can find out about that too.
That sounds great. Sarah, it's always great to have you here. Travel safe.
Thank you.
I really admire your spirit, admire your gumption. It sounds great.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Sarah Dykeman, who has roots here in Kansas City.